Good morning. Yes, it's me, Mark Stone, coming to you from Drystone Towers at 103.5 FM, Backseat Driver Radio Show, with my guest this morning, Neil Molyneux, from the famous 2300 Club. It's a club that I've known about for a long time. It's shall we say, a serious rally club. Good morning, Neil. Welcome to the Backseat Driver Radio Show.
Good morning, Mark. Thank you for inviting me on.
Pleasure. Right, I mean, before we go into it all, you're like the head honcho, the chairman of the club. How did you get into everybody has a route into motorsport.
Well, my route was via my father, actually. My father was chairman of the 2300 Club before I was, and also chairman of the Tour of Moor Rally that we used to organise. And it was through his involvement in rallying as a competitor and latterly as an organiser that my enthusiasm for rallying developed.
So you're nothing but a bambino when it all started then?
Well, yeah, I was. I can remember the early days of my dad going rallying in the early 60s when he used to go rallying in the Family Triumph Herald and... he was capable of bringing home pots even in that sort of a vehicle.
So how long has the 2300 Club been going? As I said, it's a club that I've known about for a long, long time.
Well, it probably precedes both of us, Mark. The 2300 Club was formed in 1955. It was part of the sports and social club at the Mullard Factory in Blackburn. And in those days, the Mullard Factory employed 6,000 people.
I'm going to say that's a bit of a blast from the past, is Mullard's, isn't it? I mean, my dad worked there for a while. It seemed to employ nearly everybody over like that part of Lancashire, did Mullard's.
Well, they did a large factory in Blackburn and another large factory in Simonstone, churning out valves and cathode ray tubes and components that are now no longer in common use.
Well, they were the things that, after you got fed up a belt in your television one to make it come back on, you called somebody out to come and put some new valves in.
That's right. Well, that's the factory that spawned the 2300 Club, made valves by the million. Yeah.
So where does the 2300 Club come from? I mean, what is the 2300 bit?
Ah, well, it was formed as part of the Sports and Social Club in the Mullard Factory, and the full title of the 2300 Club is the Mullard Motorcycle and Car Club, which was a bit of a mouthful. And some educated member of the club came up with the idea that if you took the initials MMCCC and converted those into Roman numerals, then you got you got 2300. So 2300 Club started as the nickname for the Mullard Motorcycle Car Club, and it's now the name.
I'm glad you told me that. It's one of those things. It's intrigued me for years as this 23. Daft as it sounds, for some reason, I always used to associate it with Triumph, and I don't know why, but I used to have it in my mind. It was something to do with a Triumph car.
But no, it's to do with Latin, I'm afraid.
It's to do with Latin. So, I mean, over the years, they've organised lots and lots and lots of serious events, haven't they? Like the famous motoring news rounds and things. I mean, that was serious rallying back in the day, wasn't it?
Well, in the 60s and 70s, the Motoring News Rally Championship was the championship to take part in. And, yeah, very prestigious. And before we went to Mull to organise the Tour of Mull Rally, this is before my time, but we used to organise an event in Lancashire and Yorkshire and Cumbria called the Mullard Trophy Rally. And the Mullard Trophy became part of the Motoring News Championship, and the Motoring News Championship had sufficient trust in the 2300 Club to follow them to the Isle of Mull. And... the Isle of Mull, the Mull Rally, the Tour of Mull became a Motoring News Championship event, and very successfully.
I mean, back in the day, Motoring News, I mean, I don't know whether it still exists or not, but these used to take place a lot of time, like Saturday night, Sunday mornings, didn't they? When the B roads and the unclassified roads, there was nobody really knocking about on them, and off you guys used to go.
Well, that's right, yeah. And the Motoring News consisted of events solely in England and Wales, as you say, overnight Saturday. So people would turn up on Saturday evening, do the event, have their breakfast and go home.
And in the back then, I mean, a lot of the rally cars, you could really do it in anything you wanted back then, couldn't you? I mean, you didn't have to have a full-blown works car. I mean, like I was saying to a friend of mine, Rosie Smith and Bron Burrell, back in the day, a rally car was fit two spotlights and take the hubcaps off, and you were up and running.
That's right, yeah. As I said, my dad used to compete in the Family Triumph Herald. He also competed with my uncle Dennis Howarth, who had a Wolseley 1500. And I can remember, well, this is anecdotal. I don't remember at the time because I was too young. But my uncle Dennis fitted a Holder Trip to his Wolseley 1500, which a lot of his fellow competitors regarded as cheating.
Because it used to be done by the good old, like, plotting from Ordnance Survey maps, didn't it? And a stopwatch and everything else. And if you were being posh, you had a map light on a swan neck stuck above the front passenger or co-driver's head. And they used to have to try and work it all out. Because you used to get a little plastic thing called a roamer, which allowed you to measure everything on an OS map.
Yeah, 1 inch to the mile.
1 inch to the mile, the good old days.
Yeah. And if you were a very sophisticated navigator, you had a potty.
Yes, oh yeah, an illuminated magnifying glass that went over the map.
That's right, yeah. Happy days.
And it'd be a clipboard, piece of hardboard with a big crocodile clip, wouldn't it?
The cars all carried stopwatches which were sealed into a Perspex box, and the organisers placed the seal on the box, and the cleverer navigators came up with various ways of cheating, drilling small holes into the Perspex and altering the stopwatch.
So, I mean, you were saying before we went on air about the Tour of Mull. I mean, you got into it all as a youngster by going to Mull for a holiday.
Well, in 1968, my father took the family, that was mum, dad and three kids, on a holiday to the Isle of Mull, which was, in those days, there was no... The M6 went as far as Carnforth, and then beyond there were no dual carriageways, and so it took...
That'd be a serious undertaking.
Serious trek, yes. It took all day to get to Oban, and then we had to be loaded onto the ferry by a lift. And
don't mind me asking, what car were you in?
We were in a Mark 1 Cortina GT.
Very nice.
Yeah, FBV 705D. I wish I still had it.
I'm going to say, yeah, I mean, one of my dad's first cars was a Cortina Super, PHG 101. Navy. I mean, it's surprising how things come back to you. It's like somebody said, they're the good old days. If you think back, they probably weren't quite as rosy as you thought they were, but maybe an improvement on what we're all going through today.
Yeah.
So, I mean, was it your dad who suggested the rally on the Isle of Mull?
Well, our arrival on Mull was it wasn't a good start, really, because it was absolutely pouring down, and we were staying in the grounds of Glengorm Castle, right on the north tip of Mull, in a little cottage. And in those days, the road from Tobermory to Glengorm wasn't made up, so it was a farm track of about 5 miles, potholed and full of... potholes full of water, and as we bounced up the track to Glengorm Castle, my mum started crying, saying,
what the hell
have you brought us here for? Anyway, things improved during the week, and the sun came out, and we had an absolutely marvellous time. And one evening, Mr. Carr, who was part of the Carr's Biscuits family, they were corn millers from Cumbria.
I'm rather fond of their water biscuits.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Carr, who owned Glengorm Castle, invited Mum and Dad to the castle for drinks. And as they were showing them round, in his office, Mr. Carr had pictures of him racing Bentleys at Brooklands and Donington in between the two world wars. So that prompted a conversation about motorsport, and there was, my dad made a throwaway remark that was, this island would make a great place to run a rally. And Mr. Carr said, yeah, you're right. So that was the seed that began the Tour of Mull, and the first Tour of Mull ran in the following year, in 1969.
So, right, so it had been going that long, because a lot of people tend to think it's a relatively newish event, is the Tour of Mull.
No, no, this the Tour of Mull, which takes place, or the Mull Rally, as it is now called.
Because you were saying it's gone through various guises over the years, hasn't it, the rally?
It's evolved, and we, the 2300 Club, organised it for 40 years, and then we gave up and passed it on. Well, yeah, we sort of, it got more difficult, and the pleasure went out of it for a lot of us, and we sort of ran out of steam, so we gave up, and a combination of people based around loosely around Mull Car Club took over running the rally, and they ran it for 2 years, and it's not run now for the last 2 years, the most recent 2 years, and this year they've got it off the ground again, and it's coming back next month, and it's the entry is oversubscribed, and it's going to be a great event.
I mean, one thing is, I've never been to Mull, I'll be quite honest. It's somewhere I would like to go at some point, but from what I've seen of it, I mean, it's quite narrow roads and walls and everything else. I mean, it's typical what you might call hardcore rally country, but I suppose as time goes on from when the event started, it's like the evolution of the cars that make it difficult in a way, because back in the 60s, etc., the cars wouldn't have been as fast or anything like that. So I suppose you have to constantly build in provisions for the modern rally car.
That's right, yeah. Well, one mistake that the organisers made in the first year of the Tour of Mull in 1969 was they underestimated how fast the cars were going. so the timing made a lot of the selective cleanable. They didn't make that mistake again.
So, I mean, over the years, what we should be like the successful cars? Does it tend to be the small cars? Or, I mean, we went through an era of, like, with Subaru, before the Impreza came along, there was the big Subaru, was it called the Legend?
That's right, yeah.
And, I mean, they were big cars. I think, was it Pentier Riccola drove one of those, and McRae drove one for a while.
I don't remember that, yeah.
I don't think he drove one for very long. I seem to remember he only did, like, a couple of rallies in one of those, but they were big cars, and looking at Mull, I conclude it's a small car sort of place.
Well, the very first Tour of Mull was won first and second places, certainly were Cooper S's.
Yeah.
And then very soon, Twin Cam Escorts arrived, and they were going a lot faster. And, so George Hill, who was the winner in 1969, he swapped allegiance from his Mini Cooper S to a twin cam Escort and won it again the following year. So, yeah, and Escorts are still very prominent. Mark II Escorts, which are now at a very advanced stage of development and don't bear much relation to an original Mark II Escort. But they've been very successful on Mull and still are, and probably the best cars to watch.
I mean, what sort of, without being derogatory about it now, but I conclude it had a heyday when it would have brought in some serious well-known drivers.
Yeah, the problem we had, or not the problem, or the restriction we placed on ourselves organising the Tour of Mull, was that the island and the mileage and the amount of accommodation and the delicate nature of the PR balance between running a rally and keeping the islanders happy meant that we couldn't really go much beyond being part of the Motor News Championship, even though there was potential on the island to probably become a national event if we wanted to do that.
Yeah.
And we took a decision that that's not where we were going to go. And we did attract top line drivers who came to Mull really for a change and a novelty. And we had Roger Clark there 1 year, although Roger Clark and Jim Porter turned up, but their car, the mechanic who was bringing the car up from Boreham, crashed it just outside Oban. So there's a famous picture of Roger sat on the railings outside the MacDonald Arms Hotel, looking very downcast. He was in Tobermory and didn't have a car to do the rally.
So, I mean, how big is the Isle of Mull?
Well, it's from top to bottom, it's about 50 miles. Mm. and in width it's about 30 miles wide at its widest point and 2 miles wide at its narrowest point.
Right, so I conclude a lot of the stages. How many stages in the Tour of Malacca? Because I conclude each stage, for want of a better description, there's a finite number of roads. It will be roads running various directions, and instead of turning left there, turn right there and everything else. Yes. It would have been a very creative use of a finite amount of roads.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's a juggling act, yes. There are only a certain number of roads available, and they have to be used several times and in different directions and different combinations of roads to create the stages. We used to the roads down the east coast of Mull are, even though they're single track, or in those days they were entirely single track, were classed as A roads, and we had to get special dispensation from the RAC to run stages on A roads.
So an Isle of Mull A road isn't no most folk conception of an A road, but to the Isle of Mull, it is a serious A road.
Well, it's an A road, but it's sufficiently tortuous to provide a competitive stage, yeah.
So, over the years, as I said, it's evolved, and it's a subject we regrettably have to touch on. It suffered from a couple of fatalities, which didn't do its reputation a lot of good. But as I've always said, it's a bit like the other week at Spa. If you're going to climb in a racing car, if you're going to climb in a rally car, are you going to climb on board a racing motorbike, it's always to be in your mind that this could possibly happen. It's not something anybody wants to see. People want to see good quality racing, good quality rallying. But no matter how good your crash helmet is, your roll cage, your hands device, some of the speeds that racing drivers reach, all the safety devices in the world aren't going to help you or save you. I mean, did you find this had a negative effect on the Tour of Mull rally? Or are all rally drivers, shall we say, a bit like me? Well, it's regrettably part of the sport, and it can happen, and let's go.
Well, the first fatality, which was when we were organising the event still, which was in the 90s, was a lady, Sue Cameron, was killed, and a double tragedy was that her husband was driving the car. So that really, as organisers, that made us think, crikey, what are we doing here? You know, is this, do we want to be involved in something where people are dying? And it didn't appear to have a negative effect on the rally. We stopped the event, and then we continued the event, and in fact Duncan Cameron, whose wife Sue had died, came back the following year in the same vehicle and requested that he start at the same start position, saying that, I've come to finish off the job that I didn't complete last year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a very tough time, and you know, the an organiser's worst nightmare.
And from there, of course, there's it's like spun off, because something similar happened to a degree with was Andy Mort.
That's right, yeah. Andy Mort was in fact a member, 2300 club member, and he was killed on the event 4 years ago.
Yeah, but that has spun off to, you are now doing the Andy Mort Memorial.
Well, now that we're no longer...
I'm not being funny, it's not humble, and it's not quite as hardcore competitive.
Not at all, no, but we're all quite a lot older now, so having retired from organising the Tour of Mull, we took up a bit more gentler occupation, and we now organise the Andy Mort Tour, which is obviously run in memory of Andy, and that will be held this year on the 19th of October. It's a touring car assembly based at West Bradford near Clitheroe, and taking in roads in Yorkshire and Lancashire, lunch halt, supper halt, and this year we're delighted, absolutely delighted, that we've got Paddy Hopkirk in attendance. So Paddy will be there at the start and at the lunch halt, and then he's going to do a little presentation following supper. So we're and the Paddy effect has had a bit of a boost on our entry.
I mean, that's in many ways why you're sat here, because on social media a new story popped up about Paddy Opkirk, a fine Irish gentleman I've met on a few occasions. I thought, hey, Paddy's around the place, what's he doing? And that's, shall we say, I backtracked it and you popped up.
yeah, well, it was all through the good offices of Chris Harper and Minisport that we got, because they do quite a bit of work with Paddy, and I approached them and said, what do you think? And they said, well, I'm sure he'd be delighted, and he was. So yeah, it's a great coup for the 2300 Club to have Paddy Opkirk associated with our event.
And it's like you said, the event will crisscross the borders, Lancashire, Yorkshire. I mean, for anybody who's not altogether au fait with all this, I mean, this part of the north of England, the Lancashire-Yorkshire borders and round there, has some fantastic roads. And it's like you said, a touring assembly. There's no speed involved. It's like plotting from A to B to C to D and everything else. So, I mean, it's a fantastic part of the world to be doing something like this. But, I mean, just run us quickly through, what is a touring assembly?
Well, as you say, Mark, a touring assembly, it's a ride out. It's a ride out with a bit of navigational test on the way. So the route is provided. We can provide the route in two different forms, and the competitors or the participants choose which version they want. They can either have a list of map references or a book of tulip diagrams.
Yeah.
And they follow the route. They're not allowed to exceed 30 mph average. And the route will take them round some of the most spectacular roads in the north of England to a lunch halt, which I'm afraid I'm not privileged to know where the lunch halt is, because I'm taking part in the event, so they won't tell me. And then back to Castle Cement, the cement works at Clitheroe, where we have some auto test style.
Now they're always entertaining,
fun events,
aren't they?
Yeah, on their car park, and then back to West Bradford Village Hall for supper, and the Paddy Opkirk Forum.
So, but I mean, you were saying like grid references and tulips. Grid references is where you get a six-figure OS reference, and you have to have the appropriate map. If you haven't got the right map, it's a complete waste of time to you. And you say we're going from here to there, but the tulips are quite, anybody can follow a tulip, really, can't they? You set off, and it's a case of in X amount of distance or miles, you'll come to a junction. You will be turning left at that junction. Invariably, they'll tell you where you're likely to be heading towards. And tulips are very easy to... Following tulips makes, shall we say, non-competitive motorsport very entertaining. It's something anybody can do. I mean, you can do it in the car you go to work, in your car you go shopping, and you don't need competition cars for these, do you?
No. But people can compete in anything. We like to encourage people to bring in interesting machinery.
It's ideal for classics, really, isn't it?
It is. That's right. Ideal. Yeah. And it's the roads are all, they're all tarmac surface. There's nothing that's going to damage your car. And as you say, the tulips, they're simple. It's a little bit daunting the first time. If you've never seen a book of tulip diagrams before, it's a bit daunting the first time you open it. But actually, once you get going, it's very straightforward.
Because the only other thing you need is your trip meter as well in your car, that you normally zero off to see how far you've gone before you're going to have to fill up with petrol again.
Well, yeah, you're right. Each junction is represented by a diagram, which is known as a tulip, and the road book will give you the distances between each junction. So you need an accurate trip meter to make sure that you're at the right junction that is represented by the tulip diagram.
And because if you're not careful, some of you, like unscrupulous organiser types, will discover where there's two junctions that look more or less the same, and you've got to make sure that you turn left at the junction that's 1.6 miles away from the last one, and not the one that's 1.2 miles away from the last one. But if you forget to keep zero in your trips, that's where the fun takes place, because you'll say, aye, look out, they've turned left at wrong one.
You're right, yeah. And the emphasis of the Andy Mort Tour is a fun day out. It's not, we're not trying to catch people out.
Yeah. Right, when we come back, we shall be talking about the John Eason Award, the grant that the 2300 Club make to up-and-coming and aspiring rally drivers. So anybody out there who is young, unlike me, and I don't think Neil will come say, but unlike Neil as well, we're both creaking along nicely, it's one of those things, if you are any good at rallying, and the club think you are, you may well end up with a 2300 club bursary or grant. But we will be talking about that when we come back.
We love local.
Drystone Radio.
Love great music.
Love Drystone Radio.
Yes, we all love Drystone Radio, especially me, for the simple reason I get to listen to my own voice. And it's, people will tell you, the one thing I do like is the sound of my own voice. Right, we're back with Neil Molyneux from the 2300 Club. As we have found out in the first part, we now know why it's called the 2300 Club, because it's Latin. Now, whilst we were having a quick bit of entertainment from the Foo Fighters, Neil and I were discussing the John Eason Award for Young Rally Drivers. I mean, what exactly is that? How did it come about? And the fact, in my opinion, it's got to be virtually unique as this.
Yeah, yeah. Can we? Are we allowed to have virtually unique?
Well, I don't know. Unique. it is unique. Hey, how dare I?
Anyway, the way it came about, Mark, was that John Eason was an Edinburgh airline owner. He owned a freight airline, and he used to compete on the Tour of Morale. And he had such
everything comes back to Scotland for you guys.
It appears to, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah. And he was so enthusiastic about the Tour of Mull that he left us some money in his will, and he died in an aircraft accident, and so we became beneficiaries. And he left us this amount of money, which we puzzled over for a while and had to decide what we were going to do with it. And one of the ideas that we had, and this was actually the idea of Taff Edwards, who was the secretary of the Tour of Mull rally secretary for 25 years, and Taff had the idea of providing a scholarship for a young rally driver. And this idea evolved, and what we currently do is we invite young rally drivers or co-drivers to apply for the scholarship. They put together a package which explains to us why they think they should win.
So without being rude, it's what they call in modern day terms a PowerPoint presentation.
Well, it's either PowerPoint or we actually prefer pieces of paper.
Or you're like me.
We're old fashioned.
Have you read your magazine on your lap, on your tablet? No, I like these things called bits of paper.
Yeah. So the initial applications are made on paper. We have a subcommittee of very experienced rally people who select three of the best applicants. We invite them to come and make a presentation to us, and then on the basis of the presentation we choose a winner. And over the number of years that we've been doing this, which is probably 15 or anyway whatever 15 years, let's say, the panel have been extremely successful in choosing the right people. We've managed to choose youngsters who have gone on to achieve great results. This year's, the current winner is George Lepley, who's competing in the BTRDA series.
That's the British Tarmac Rally Drivers Association.
Yes. Although it is a stage series, it's on loose, and he's competing bizarrely in a Hillman Avenger and achieving fantastic results.
Oh, proper car!
Proper car, yeah. So, as I say, we've been very successful in choosing worthy winners, and the scholarship is worth £5,000 with a bonus of another £1,000 if they win the class in their selected championship for the year.
Now, if somebody is thinking of applying for this, how do they go about it? Because, I mean, you don't want... Is there an age limit on it?
There is an age limit. What they need to do is have a look at our website, 2300club.org. We're actually currently receiving nominations for this year's award, and it will be decided in December. So if they look on our website, it will give you a full list of the criteria that you need to fulfil to be eligible.
So we're going to say, you can't just... Oh, although I wouldn't mind having a do at that and rallying, I conclude you have got to have been, the applicants have to have been rallying and, shall we say, not maybe not achieve phenomenal success, because a lot of juniors starting out are in, I mean, one of the favourite little cars is like the Nissan Micra, that a lot, there's nothing wrong with Nissan Micras, before you'll start moaning and groaning at me. And they're not forced to have finished high up in their events they've done, but if they've finished, if they've achieved something, shall we say, a personal achievement, what do they need to have done before they can consider applying for the grant?
Well, obviously, there aren't any specific criteria that say they should have done this and they should have achieved these results. It's mainly based on age and ambition.
Yeah.
And what we're looking for is somebody who's keen. So the selection procedure is designed to bring to the top the people that are enthusiastic, want to succeed in rallying, and will, for the period of their tenure of the John Eason Award, be good ambassadors for the 2300 Club.
Yeah. I mean, I know you were saying one winner of it is somebody I know personally, which is Tommy Meadows, who's based, once again, slap bang on the Lancashire-Yorkshire borders, who, it's like I said, he's a nice lad, he's Tommy, very, very sensible lad when you meet him, but he's a bit of a demon behind the wheel of his rally car. But he started in a Micra, then went into a Ford Ka, and he's now rallying a reasonable specification Ford Fiesta. I mean, Tommy's done well out of it. We hope Tommy carries on to do well. I mean, what other names have you managed to bring forward in rallying?
Well, if you have a look on our website, again, on there, there's a full there's a list of all the people who've received the award. You're absolutely right that Tommy Meadows was a very worthy winner, and we like to think that it gave him a big leg up in his rallying career. And what we really
just
enjoy.
Just put it in, Tommy used to post numerous photographs of his cow in its room. We've had a slight off again on stage three, but the one thing was he never became disheartened, didn't Tommy? And I think that's the other thing.
That's right. He bounced back through the year that he was our ambassador. He bounced back several times, and he was a great winner. And really, the 2300 Club we do this because we're in a position to be able to do it, and
it's a very nice position to be able to,
Well, we're very, very fortunate, and yeah, thank you very much, John Eason. Yeah, unfortunately, he had to die to allow us to do it, but there we are.
Well, I suppose you could say
great thing to do.
He went the way he would want to go. Most pilots or anybody like that, they don't want to do it curled up in bed. They want to do it behind the controls of what they love.
Yeah,
so. As the grant goes on, I mean, when the committee look at it, I mean, what do you take into account? What, if you've two quite successful young potential drivers, how do you decide A is better than B or B is better than A?
Well, it's on the basis of the information they provide to us, and on the basis of how they present themselves at the selection meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we look for somebody who's... the idea is we want to give a young person a leg up in rallying, so the panel choose the person that they think that the award will be most useful to.
So it's as much the person as it is the rallying. So if they've been as good as they can be in rallying, fair enough, great. But it's a little bit like we were saying once again before we went on air. Colin McRae had to be given lessons in dealing with the media and dealing with people. He was a very, very quiet lad, and I suppose to a degree a shy lad. It's like you said, you're looking for ambassadors that will be able to go out and talk to people and encourage others. So it's as much about the personality of the person as it is their ability behind a wheel.
That's absolutely spot on, Mark. Yeah, yeah. And the thing is that hopefully by fostering those qualities in people, it will stand them in good stead for approaching sponsors later on in the career or whatever stage they need to go to companies or whoever to provide them some money to carry on their rallying.
I mean, that's one thing I get asked a lot. Do I know anybody who can sponsor people? And I've got to turn around and say no. yes, to a degree, I do know companies that would be open to being spoken to about sponsorship, but you've got to, they've got to put a track record in front of a potential sponsor. If you just turn up and say, I want 100 grand, please, it don't work like that.
That's right, that's right. And we have, as I say, we've been very fortunate in the winners, and they send us regular updates, regular bulletins. They publicise 2300 Club whenever they can, which we don't particularly have an axe to grind. It's more vanity for us. But the fact that they keep mentioning our name, and even people who've won the award in past years will keep going back to the fact that the 2300 Club provided them with this stepping stone.
Yeah.
And it's for us. That's great to hear.
So a lot of you, shall we say, award winners and ambassadors keep in regular contact with the club then, because in many ways they gave them the first leg up.
They do. Yeah, they do. Very gratifying.
Now, one thing is, before we come to the end of this, we're talking about, like you said, you're one of your current guys is rallying a Hillman Avenger. Great to hear. Modern rallying.
And winning rallies in it.
And winning rallies in it. Modern rallying, to my mind, is not what rallying was. It's become so soundbite. And the cars are nothing like the cars of old. But in my opinion, modern rallying has lost a lot of the soul and the character that rallying used to have.
Are we moving into the old fart section?
Well, it's not the old fart section. I mean, if a young lad going to rally an Hillman Avenger, then he's got to understand in himself what rallying used to be about. Because, I mean, the Hillman Avenger is like Roger Clark territory in its own way, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, I agree with you, Mark. Yeah. Part of the joy for us of organising the Tour of Mull over the years was that the rally had a huge social aspect to it. And it was a Motoring News Championship event, as we've discussed, and most or all the other Motoring News Championship events involve people going on Saturday, doing the rally and going home on Sunday. With the Tour of Mull, people were stuck there because the ferry, in those days, the ferries didn't operate on the Sunday. And
wasn't Caledonian McBain, was it?
McBrain, yeah. Oh, yeah. So they had to spend at least 3 days, and a lot of people spent a week there. So there was a big social aspect to the event, and it was an annual gathering of rallying friends who got together, and the pubs were very, very busy, and they forgot to close when they should have closed. Yeah. And that seems to have gone now. It does survive on Mull a little bit, but
yeah.
the social aspect and the fun and the ability of amateurs to go and achieve good results as it's gone. It's changed, and it's money, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit like, I can remember the RAC rally used to take in all of England. Now you have the Rally of Wales, which is down in South Wales. Nothing against South Wales. It's a fine and pleasant place. But it's rallying as, in my opinion, not being funny, the distances have shrunk.
Well, that's right. They've gone soft, haven't they? They like to be tucked up in bed at 10 o'clock every night, whereas the RAC rally used to involve 3 or 4 days without any sleep. And the co-driver was the co-driver, and the co-driver's job was to drive the car on the M6 when the driver was needed to have a kip.
Yeah. And let's face it, if you sell CBA spotlights these days, you're out of business for the simple reason they don't use them anymore, do they?
You can still buy them on eBay.
You can still buy them on eBay. But, I mean, the modern rally car has no relation. It looks like the one you buy in the showroom, but that's it. In the good old days, it's like I said, it was a set of spotlights, take your hubcaps off, and bingo, and if you were being posh, you had a holder. There was your rally car over great distances. Right, I would like to thank Neil Molyneux from the 2300 Club for coming in today and talking about the club, the Tour of Mull in all its guises, the Andy Mote Memorial, and of course the John Eason Award. Very quickly again, what's the 2300 Club's website, did you say?
2300club.org.
So if you think you are good enough to put yourself forward for the John Eason Award, that's the first step you take. If you want to follow some proper rallying and get involved with a proper club, go and visit that, because like most motor clubs, they're always happy to welcome new members as a rule. Decent members. I noticed they haven't invited me. Now, next week, we mentioned one Irish rally driver, Paddy Opkirk. Next Sunday, it's Rosie Fest. My recent interview with Rosie Smith, Rosemary Smith, Irish rally driver, Irish legend, fashion icon, style icon, 82 years old, Formula One car driver. Until you've met Rosie Smith, you ain't live, folks. And being a good Irish lass, she can talk and talk and talk and talk. So next Sunday, 11 o'clock, Backseat Driver Radio Show. It's my recent interview with Rosemary Smith. It is one great 40-minute hit, but you will enjoy it to bits. So that's 11 o'clock next Sunday, Backseat Driver Radio Show with me, Mark Stone, Drystone Radio. And once again, thanks to today's guest, Neil Molyneux, 2300 Club. Ta-ta.